Mr. Grossmith Reel 2. What impression did he make on the visit?
We got the impression that he was a determined leader, and he gave us the enthusiasm to follow him in the operation. We trusted him to put us in and steer us in the most effective way that could be done.
What did he look like?
He liked to wear his what we would call Middle East topi. We were issued with those when we came out on the troop ship, but as soon as we got to India, everybody laughed at us and we ditched them. But he continued always to wear his. And what did he look like? Well, somewhat gaunt and serious, but nonetheless purposeful.
Any other VIPs who came?
Yes. So at the end of our final training exercise, Lord Louis Mountbatten came to see us. We all gathered round in Holloway Square. He gets up on rostrum or boxes of some sort of, and gives us all the talk. And afterwards he shook hands with all the officers. His was more of a polished performance. It was, I think, good for morale that he did what he did. But as for the, I would regard it more as a theatre operation. Lisbon Gates was more operational and inspiring us to do our best to beat the Japs.
Did you feel at all nervous about meeting the Japanese?
Yes, did not get into it at all. We had to do it, of course. But the Japs had acquired a reputation, of course, of being a formidable enemy who never gave up and never surrendered. And more naturally, we were apprehensive, but we returned to determined to do what was necessary and give them as good as we got.
So how confident did you feel when you went in?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because we didn't know quite what we were being asked to do. When I say that, there was no firmly stated or defined military objective. If the objective had been to capture so-and-so, and it had been stated that, we could say whether we're comfortable or not. But when the objective is merely to go in and be prepared to disrupt Japanese communications, well, it's difficult to say whether we're confident or not. We're prepared to do it, yes.
Can you tell me how getting in was accomplished, as far as you were concerned, please?
Yes. We got on the railway, and we finished up at the right at the very end of the railway, where it petered out at Lido, and we were tipped out in pouring rain into the jungle. It was pouring all the time, and we were there in the middle of the night, and we couldn't unpack. We just sat in the rain and built a big fire, and we hung around there for a little while. Very wet jungle in the very north of Assam, liaised with the Americans a bit and prepared for what we were going to do, had a few conferences and so on, and eventually we got on the move on foot.
Who were you under yourself? Who were you responsible to?
I was in charge of the engineer platoon, called commander platoon, for some reason, misnomer, I'm afraid. And I was responsible to my common commander, who was Major Daniels of the Leicestershire Regiment, which was a Leicestershire Regiment now, but it wasn't then. And the other column in the Leicestershire Regiment was 17 Column, commanded by Colonel Wilkinson, which was the senior column, so indirectly, of course, we were responsible to the colonel, but my column commander was Major Daniels. And, yes, I think that answers the question.
How did you get on with him?
Major Daniels was a very good man. I liked him. He was bluff. He was a good leader of men. We also had a company commander of infantry, who was Major Tevendale. He was an ex-Glasgow policeman, a real tough nut. You had to keep on the right side of him, but he too was a stalwart.
Which battalion of the Leicesters was this?
2nd Battalion. Which I might mention, my father also served within the First World War. He was an officer of the Leicester Regiment, and I was very pleased to have been posted to that battalion and not to one of the other battalions in the brigade.
And your brigade was?
16th British Brigade.
And the column?
The column, my column, 71.
And what rank did you have at the time?
At that time I was a lieutenant, and the officer who came out from UK was a captain. And we went in together on the march, but it wasn't long before, only a few days in fact, we marched towards the sort of start area, and my colleague, the captain, got bitten by a snake and couldn't walk. So I had to take over command of the platoon, and all the way to the Chinwin, because he had to be left behind, all the way to the Chinwin, I was in command of the platoon. And at that time, the support platoon, that is the gunners, who carried a couple of medium machine guns and a couple of 3-inch mortars, there was an officer in command of the gunners, and he felt insecure, and he wanted to be coupled with the Royal Engineers. So we were for a time, but normally the captain of Royal Engineers would be in command of that group. It was a dispersal group. There was a drill that if the column got dispersed because of enemy action, certain groups were formed who would hold together and meet in the rear, following the dispersal, to regroup in the rear. And these, our dispersal group was the sappers and the gunners. And I was anxious that we should retain command of the group, whereas the gunner officer was senior to me. So when we got a few miles down the route, I spoke to my OC and said, well, look here, if I march, as my senior officer, Captain I march, was not going to be around because of his snake bite, what about putting me up to acting captain to command the group? He said, okay. So I did. And from there to the Chinwin, I was commanding the sappers and the gunners. That wasn't a normal arrangement in common, but because the gunner officer felt more secure that way, that's the way it was until we got to the Chinwin. I can go on past there if you...
What happened on the way to the Chinwin?
Well, from the start point, we had to go up a very steep hill. And there were terrible problems up this hill because the mules and their loads just couldn't get up. So the column commander said, well, what are we going to do? So I said, the only thing we can do is try and cut some steps. And we decked them with jungle and timber so that the gradients, because they were wet as well and slippery, the gradients is made negotiable. Four mules and men, a little more easily negotiable than mules and men. So we got busy with that. And Major Robinson R.C., O.C., Engineer O.C., was sent on ahead to prepare the track further ahead to make sure it was passable for the brigade. And he went on and he got stuck a bit further on, and he called for explosives to clear away some of the obstructions. And Wingate and the Brigadier, that's Brigadier Ferguson, went along to see for themselves what was going on. And we were still working on the track further back. And Wingate went to Major Robinson's party and saw what was going on, gave instructions. On his way back, he came up against a very large tree trunk across the track. And we were working on this tree trunk with saws to clear it out the way so the mules could pass easily. And we just said to Wingate and his party, "Hold it. This tree trunk could snap at any time. Great big tree trunk across the track. Very steep slopes on either side of the track downwards." And he got impatient. But we carried on sawing, and he said, "What with Wingate?" He said, "Look, you must let me pass." He got impatient. Well, just after he said that, the tree trunk snapped, up went the tree trunk, both sides. And if he'd been astride the tree trunk, it would have been catapulted into the air. Fortunately, the tree broke before he ran completely out of patience, and everything went all right.
Any other incidents on the way to the Chindwin?
No. But I would mention that for that stretch, the Queen's Regiment, two columns of the Queen's Regiment were in the lead, and they ordered a supply drop of water because they couldn't, for some reason or other, find water, and the place was steaming wet, but they couldn't find water, so they ordered water supply drop. And we in the Leicesters, who were following up, we didn't have any problem with water, but they apparently had. And these parachutes landed in the trees, as well as their food drop. And we wanted to salvage some of the parachutes which landed in the trees. And we would shoot off bullets into the parcel at the end of the parachute, and if it had water in it, would leak, of course, we didn't bother with that. But if it didn't leak, it was food. So we fell off the tree and got the food. That was an amusing little episode on the way. Nothing more particular, I think. But the Chindwin crossing was a bit of a fiasco.
In what way?
Well, for the Chindwin crossing, it was arranged to fly in boats, folding boats, and outboard motors. And these landed on the sandbank a bit further up. And it took some time for the leading column, that was 17 column, not my column, the 17 column of the Leicester Division, the leading column of the battalion, to get these sorted out. And it was in the night, of course. We didn't know what was on the other side. It was rather a long story, this, but it took a long time because the mules were resistant. They didn't like being towed across the water. They could swim, of course, if they could be persuaded to, but they had to be towed in on the back of a boat with an outboard motor on the back, and of course the mule would resist, and the outboard motor would foul the pebbles underneath, and the shear pin would break, and the motor would fizz away without turning the propellers on. So it was quite a job getting the mules across. But getting all these boats sorted out. The infantry started off doing that, and well, the sappers of 17 Common didn't get on too well either. But eventually we got it all sorted out, but it did take a bit of work to get all that in full swing. But at the Chinwin, Captain Highmarch, who we left behind with a snake bite, he rejoined us. So things were back where they were before. And I was down here at Thames again.
And after the Chinwin?
After the Chinwin, well, again, long march all the way down, past Tong Tong Long, all these dreadful there, and across Pinchy Quin, which is a big open area with no jungle on it. Feel really exposed when you're, once you're out in the jungle. The jungle is a great friend because it gives you cover. Subject to a remark I'll make later on. But the jungle, yes, we missed it when we had this great big clearing, Pinchy Quin it was called. Went across that and headed towards the Uyu, crossed the Uyu, which was a fairly big river, but not so formed as a chimney. Crossed the Uyu and came down to the Mesa River, to Nantong. Nantong later was this decaying cliff named Aberdeen, and we had to prepare an airstrip for the fly-in of the other troops at Aberdeen. That was the next staging point after the Chinwin, I would say.
How did you prepare the airstrip? Just chopping trees down?
No. It was hoeing up the buns between rice fields. The ground was relatively level, but between one field and another there would be a bank bund. And that had to be levelled off, so mainly earthworks. And they did eventually fly in some baby bulldozers. But I don't remember much more about that, I'm afraid. It must be that I wasn't on it for long, I think.
And then after Aberdeen?
After Aberdeen, we set out for Indore with instructions to the airfield. And we marched down in that direction and had our first brush with the enemy. Not quite true, because we captured some enemy, in particular the Indian Trojan Army people on the way down from the gym. We bumped into a patrol and Indian National Army people, and I still have to this day some of their propaganda handouts. But that was just two or three men. But then when we got to Oktor on the way to Indore, we were fired on. And there was quite a sharp action in which my colonel got wounded, and we had one or two casualties, inflicted more casualties on the enemy, and that was eventually overcome. Our casualties were flown out. I like playing from Oktor. The colonel, arm in sling, carried on. He was a very brave man. And we marched on to Indore. We got to Indore. There was a water problem there. And because in lower, well, I said lower Burma, but lower than we were before, it wasn't as wet as it was further on. And the Lesters launched an attack and also a party to bring up water for the troops. And their attack was pretty successful. And they were able to, they captured from an officer's mess of the Japanese some very nice sake, which they brought back, wine, Japanese wine. And a whole load of money from a Japanese interest account, but they did a good fight there. I wasn't with them because we were still up on the prominence overlooking Indore, the Sepers. This was a fighting group who went down to attack the Indore area. Infantry doing that. And at the same time, we heard about the Recce regiment columns advancing to Tekkajin. They got shot at very badly, we heard. But we did our stuff. And we were there for quite some time. And during that time, the Sapper officer commanding the commando platoon, as it was called, engineer platoon, for the 17 column, got hit by a sniper firing a machine gun across a certain vulnerable section of our trench. That was Captain Cann. He was hit, together with one or two others. And he was in our field ambulance area, with no tent, of course. It was just a patch in the jungle where the casualties were laid out and tended to. And the time came when he, I'm afraid, died. And I was asked to take over from Captain Cann in 17 column. Hitherto I'd been in 71 column. I was asked to take over, and I said to the lieutenant in 17 column, I said, well, natural thing would have been for you to take over, but they've asked me to take over. He said, that's all right, I understand, because I was seeing it again. So from then on, I moved over from 71 to 17 column and commanded the Sapper platoon, but not the Gunner platoon, in 17 column. And put up my third pip again. I say put it up figuratively, because we didn't wear any badges of rank on the operation. And that was the 27th of March, from which time I was back to captain. And I marched with 17 column after that.
Was there much difference between 17 and 71 columns?
Well, much difference. Well, if you look at them, you would see that 71 column had beards and 17 column did not, because the colonel expected all troops and officers in his column to shave, whereas it was fashionable for juniors to grow beards, and 71 column followed the fashion, but 17 did not. So there is an obvious difference.
What did you think about the relative advantages of the two systems?
I was pleased to have a beard because it protected, or partly protected, your face against mosquitoes and some bits and pieces and one sort of another. And also, of course, there was a factor in camouflage. And when I said just now that the infantry went down and did the fighting, that's true, they did. But while we were at Indore, the colonel wanted a patrol, and a very strong patrol at that, to go around to deal with some enemy outposts a little further around the spur. And so our platoon, our engineer platoon, this was still the 71 column, and some infantry were sent round, and we did go round, and we got heavily fired on. And one of my men was hit, another man was killed. And I was told by my senior, Captain Hindmarsh, who was there, to go and pass through these men. And of course, I was expecting to be fired at, and we were fired at heavily. But eventually I was told, because of the firing, I got a message from the rear not to pursue it further. So on the way back, we picked up the machine gun, a light machine gun, of the man who'd been killed, because it was a useful weapon and he couldn't carry it. We had to leave him where he was, I'm afraid, and bring back the wounded chap, which we did. And we got back the top of the hill where the rest is entrenched. I say entrenched, we didn't have trenches, we just lay down on the jungle floor, of course. And when we got back, there was one NCO who had been with our party, who had gone back and said we were in trouble and needed rescuing and reinforcements and so on, which wasn't strictly true. And he later, in the course of our stay at this indoor hill, became more and more nervous and unnerved and restive, and we had to relieve him, I'm afraid, of his duties. So obviously some of the troops were under severe strain, and this particular man, I'm afraid, broke down.
Was there anything that had happened to him that had particularly caused that individual to go like that?
No, there wasn't. Furthermore, back in the rear area, before we started, he was a very efficient and active NCO.
Can you take the story a bit further, please?
Well, it does seem that some chest slapping and swaggering and confident NCOs in normal circumstances can break down under severe pressure when it comes to action. And similarly, some apparently innocuous sheepish-looking people can really, when they get into action, show terrific courage and perseverance in the face of hardship. It's funny how these contrasts throw themselves up.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, the time came when communications with brigade headquarters had become difficult, and we were stuck out on a limb. The recce regiment comms, who were supposed to have attacked from our western side, were not coming through. I think they'd been badly shot up, and so we were newly exposed, and the time came when we had to withdraw from that area because we weren't really getting anywhere. On the way back, we were again a bit tight for water, and we would dig around in the beds of the streams in the sand, dig a hole in the sand until we could get water out of the stream bed. And coming along towards us as we went back was a detachment of the recce regiment who thought that we might need some help. Well, they themselves were looking a bit shocked, battle shocked, and